everyone, and good Saturday morning as we are checking in with this edition of the Mason City Globe Gazette. This is the Friday, September 16th edition, as brought to you here on Saturday morning. Hope you're having a great one, everyone. Getting ready for a day of football and all kinds of other great things happening today. And hopefully a nice weekend where you're at. We'll have a check of the forecast first, looking at a mix of clouds and sun this morning, followed by cloudy skies this afternoon. A stray shower or thunderstorm is possible in the area. Those winds from the south up to 20 miles per hour, a high of 78 degrees for your Saturday. Well, let's check in with tonight and see what's happening then. We're looking at a low of 62 degrees going into Sunday morning, a 24% chance of precipitation throughout the day. And going into tomorrow, expect another high of 78 degrees. Now, cooler tomorrow night, a low of 53 degrees, and then again 80 degrees on your Monday. So we'll be warming up a little bit. But towards the end of the week, on Thursday, as it sits now, looking at a high of just 62 degrees. So it is cooling down out there. We are feeling the beginning of fall. That is right around the corner. Taking a check of these headlines, atherosclerosis rate very high as they're continuing their special series, What's Killing North Iowa? Along with that, the death rate in the region is over 9 times higher than in the U.S. as a whole. And then we go to Mason City Walgreens store faces sanctions. That location is among 9 in Iowa punished by state licensing officials. And then finally on the front page, Pipe Dream Pizza opens downtown. New eatery focuses on Neapolitan style, has a homemade oven. That's a Neapolitan is a type of pizza. All right. So we're starting it off here with the special series, What's Killing North Iowa? That's written by Mary Loden of the Globe Gazette. Most people are familiar with the diseases that are leading causes of death in the United States, like heart disease and cancer. But one health threat, atherosclerosis, deposits of plaque of fatty material on the inner walls of the arteries, is the number 9th leading cause of death in North Iowa, while not appearing among the top 15 causes nationally. According to mortality data from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, for the years 1999 to 2020, 792 people died from atherosclerosis in the 9-county region consisting of Cerro Gordo, Floyd, Franklin, Hancock, Kossuth, Mitchell, Winnebago, Worth, and Wright counties, a rate of 26 per 100,000 people. That compares with the national rate of 2.8 per 100,000. The year 2020 alone saw 17 deaths from atherosclerosis in the 9-county region. According to the National Heart, Blood, and Lung Institute, atherosclerosis is a common type of arteriosclerosis, which refers to the arteries of the heart thickening and losing their flexibility. However, atherosclerosis can occur in any artery in the body, including the heart, brain, arms, legs, pelvis, and kidneys. It has different names depending on which artery is affected. It slowly develops as cholesterol, fat, blood cells, and other substances in your blood form a sticky substance called plaque that builds up inside and outside the artery walls. The plaque causes the arteries to narrow, which reduces the supply of oxygen-rich blood to vital organs in the body. This silent killer often has no symptoms until plaque ruptures or the buildup completely restricts blood flow, causing heart attacks, stroke, vascular dementia, erectile dysfunction, and loss of limbs, to name just a few serious problems. We'll talk about the numbers. Cerro Gordo and surrounding counties have a higher percentage of atherosclerosis-related deaths than most of the nation, according to the CDC. Dr. Tarek Elajami, a cardiologist at Mercy One North Iowa in Mason City, explained the risk factors for coronary atherosclerosis are divided into two categories, modifiable and non-modifiable. Non-modifiable factors include age, gender, ethnicity, and family history. It is the modifiable factors such as smoking, lipid disorders, high blood pressure, diabetes, obesity, and physical inactivity that can be addressed. Compared to other states, only obesity is the most prominent risk factor in the state of Iowa, Elajami said. In 2020, according to the CDC, Iowa ranked the seventh most obese state in the country with a rate of 36.5%, up from 33.9% in 2019. A study done by the University of Wisconsin's Population Health Institute produced a report called the County Healthy Rankings and Roadmaps 2022. This study took into account health behaviors such as smoking, diet, exercise, alcohol, and drug use, as well as looking at health care, social and economic factors, and physical environment across all of Iowa's 99 counties. Compared to the Iowa state average, our nine counties demonstrated higher levels of smoking, obesity, and physical inactivity, Elijami said. A list ranking North Iowa counties from healthiest to least healthy put Hancock and Mitchell near the top and Franklin, Floyd, and Cerro Gordo near the bottom. This data may explain the cardiometabolic crisis and higher prevalence of coronary artery disease in our nine counties compared to other state counties and the nation, Elijami said. Symptoms diagnosis. For people with a higher risk of developing atherosclerosis, an appointment with your doctor may be in order. Elijami said a doctor will screen for high blood levels of LDL cholesterol and fats in the bloodstream and look for high blood glucose and elevated blood pressure. More tests will be ordered if a doctor suspects an atherosclerosis. Elijami said symptoms related to coronary artery disease may present differently in women, older people, and people with diabetes and high blood pressure. Typically, a person should call 911 or get an emergency room to an emergency room if experiencing chest discomfort that radiates to the arm, neck, or jaw and is aggravated by exertion or stress. Also, be aware of cramping in the buttocks while walking, shortness of breath, unexplained fatigue, or unnatural confusion. Prevention. The plaque buildup that leads to atherosclerosis often starts during childhood and gets worse with age. While plaque isn't completely preventable or reversible, there are several things that lower risk factors. Treatments range from medications to lower blood pressure to procedures that open blocked arteries. But doctors will usually recommend a healthy diet and exercise as the first line of treatment. Adam Long from the Clear Lake Wellness Center has a master's degree in health science and wellness from Northwest Missouri State University. He has also been a strength and conditioning coach since 2005. Nutrition can be intimidating, Long said. Look at food labels. It is frightening. Everything is processed. There are a lot of ingredients in our food with no reason to be there, like extra oils, sugars, and preservatives. Some of these ingredients have been banned in other countries, but they are allowed here. In this fast-paced information age, Long said, information can also be a curse. What do you believe? But we all agree that the least amount of processed foods consumed, the better, he said. What makes eating healthy so difficult is no two people are the same. What works for some might not work for others, Long said. Genetics also come into play. We all know someone who lives a very unhealthy lifestyle that lives a long time, he said. The United States is a very sedentary country as a whole. If you don't change your diet and the way you eat, if you're not tracking the ingredients in your food, then just try to stay as active as possible, Long advised. Exercise keeps the heart muscle strong and encourages oxygen and blood flow throughout the body. Studies have shown that 75 to 150 minutes of aerobic exercise a week can help fight atherosclerosis by reducing the amount of fat in your blood, lowering your blood pressure and cholesterol, and controlling your weight. Being consistent with what you do is very important, Long said. There is no end date with wellness. There is never a point when you can quit. Daily healthy lifestyle, make it as important as a meeting with your boss. That written by Mary Loden, who covers city and county government for the Globe Gazette, and can be reached by emailing Mary, M-A-R-Y, dot Loden, L-O-D-E-N, at GlobeGazette.com. Back to front page news. As we look at Mason City Walgreens store faces sanctions. That location among nine in Iowa punished by state licensing officials. It's written by Clark Kaufman of the Iowa Capital Dispatch. State licensing officials have sanctioned pharmacies in 9 of Iowa's Walgreens stores for a variety of alleged violations, including missing narcotics, a lack of qualified personnel, and issues that caused some Iowans to lose access to their medications. 2 of the 9 stores were sanctioned earlier this year for their hiring practices. The store hit with the most serious penalties is the Walgreens pharmacy located at 1251 4th Street Southwest in Mason City. The Iowa Board of Pharmacy charged the store with 6 separate regulatory violations, practicing in a manner that is harmful to the public, failure to employ an adequate number of qualified personnel, failure to ensure that the perpetual inventory record for all Schedule II controlled substances is accurate and matches the actual on-hand inventory, and then failure to transfer prescriptions to another pharmacy upon the request of a patient, failure to adhere to regulations pertaining to a change in status of the pharmacist in charge, and failure to create and maintain complete and accurate records. According to the board, the Mason City Pharmacy underwent an inspection in December of 2021 in response to a complaint received by the board. During the inspection, the board's compliance officer observed inadequate staffing and noted that the store experienced a high level of staff turnover. The compliance officer, who also noted that after 3 different Schedule II controlled substances were counted, the tallies for all 3 showed discrepancies between the written perpetual inventory count and the actual on-hand inventory of those drugs. In addition, the store's permanent pharmacist in charge had vacated that position in March of 2021, but the board did not receive notification of the temporary person in charge who was appointed, and the board did not receive an application naming a new permanent pharmacist in charge until late December of that year. Also, during the week of January 17th, 2022, the Mason City store was intermittently closed during regular business hours due to the lack of pharmacist coverage. When the pharmacy was available to find coverage and reopened to the public, the pharmacists on staff were unable to transfer prescriptions elsewhere when patients asked them to do so. As a result, some patients were unable to access their medications. The board has placed the Mason City store's license on probation for 18 months and imposed a $20,000 civil penalty, although payment of $10,000 of that penalty will be stayed depending on compliance with other conditions established by the board. In addition, if the store's pharmacy is unable to be opened during normal business hours due to a lack of inadequate staffing, it must notify patients and prescribers of the closure in a timely manner, both through signage and a recorded message that provide a telephone number that patients can pass on to another pharmacy of their choosing, allowing the other pharmacy to directly call and request the transfer of prescriptions. The West Des Moines store was fined $4,500. In addition to the charges levied against the Mason City store, the board also charged the Walgreens store at 1999 Grand Avenue in West Des Moines with violating state rules requiring pharmacies to employ and place in charge a professionally competent, legally qualified pharmacist, rules that pertain to changes in the status of the pharmacist in charge, and rules that require pharmacies to perform an accurate inventory of all controlled substances immediately after terminating a pharmacist in charge. Specifically, the board stated the store's pharmacist in charge vacated that position on September 7, 2021, and the store operated without a temporary or permanent pharmacist in charge for 7 weeks until October 28, 2021. In addition, the store allegedly failed to submit to the board an application identifying the new permanent pharmacist in charge until November the 9th of last year, 2021. That application was reportedly incomplete, and then the store then failed to promptly respond to board requests for additional information, the board alleged. Also, the store was accused of failing to complete a controlled substances inventory until November the 4th, 2021, almost 2 months after the previous pharmacist in charge had been terminated. The store denied the allegations, but agreed to a settlement that entails a $4,500 civil penalty. Other stores face $10,000 in penalties. At its August meeting, the board also imposed sanctions against 7 other Iowa Walgreens stores, most of which faced an identical set of charges and penalties. The 7 stores are located at 15601 Hickman Road in Clive, 12753 University Avenue in Clive, 901 North Ankeny Boulevard in Ankeny, 3140 Southeast 14th Street in Des Moines, 2545 East Euclid Avenue in Des Moines, 4555 Fleur Drive in Des Moines, and 111 West Ridgeway Avenue in Waterloo. The store located at 3140 Southeast 14th Street in Des Moines faced a set of charges different from the other six. That store was the target of a complaint alleging that patient counseling was not provided to a patient given a new prescription for prednisone. The store's security video recordings confirm that counseling was not provided. In September of 2021, the store was inspected. At that time, the store's on-hand count of hydrocodone was short 247 tablets, after which a board compliance officer requested a full audit of all Schedule II controlled substances. That audit identified a shortage of 44 tablets of oxycodone and a shortage of 60 capsules of dexmethylphenidate. The six remaining Walgreens stores were each charged with failing to maintain accountability of controlled substances and records, and with failing to create and maintain complete and accurate records of all controlled substances on hand. According to the board, each of the six pharmacies reported losses of controlled substances to the board in November of 2020, which Walgreens staff attributed to employee theft. The available documents made public by the board do not disclose the full scope of the theft. The board later asked Walgreens Co. to perform an audit of all controlled substances at the six stores from June of 2019 through June of 2021. The audit reports for each of the pharmacies showed a large number of drug products which were found to have losses or overages, the board alleged, and Walgreens Co. was unable to definitively determine what led to the loss of so many controlled substances. According to the board, the audit indicated that many of the inventory quantities that showed zero controlled substances on hand must have been inaccurately entered at the time of the annual inventory, although it is not clear from the board records what that means with regard to actual losses versus inaccurately reported losses. The license of each of the six pharmacies, as well as the license of the Des Moines store on Southeast 14th Street, have been placed on probation for 1 year, and each store has been fined $20,000, although only $10,000 of that needs to be paid depending on compliance with other board requirements, the remaining $10,000 in penalties considered stayed. In addition, all permanent pharmacists and technicians employed at the seven stores must complete 2 hours of additional education on inventory management and commit to implementing a new inventory management system by the end of October. Also, any discrepancies between the actual and expected counts of controlled substances shall result in a $500 civil penalty, and delays in implementing the inventory controlled system shall result in a $1,500 penalty, with both to be drawn from the $10,000 in state penalties. In March, two of the sanctioned Walgreens stores were among three that were penalized by the Iowa Board of Pharmacy for violations related to hiring practices. The Walgreens store at 12753 University Avenue in Clive was fined $1,500 for operating for 12 days last spring without a designated pharmacist in charge, and the store at 3140 Southeast 14th Street in Des Moines was fined $750 for hiring two pharmacy technician trainees who were not registered with the board. In addition, the store at 3030 University Avenue in Des Moines was fined $1,500 for employing a person to assist a pharmacist with technical work in October of 2021, even though the employee would not become a registered pharmacy technician until the following month. That from the Iowa Capital Dispatch, which is part of the state's newsroom, a network of news bureaus supported by grants and a coalition of donors as a 501c3 public charity. Contact editor Kathy Obradovich for questions. You can find that at info@iowacapitaldispatch.com. And you can also follow that publication on Facebook and Twitter. And that story airing here in the Mason City Globe Gazette. This is the Friday, September 16th edition. Andrew Haupt with you here, reading it to you. Now back to more local news, which that was partially local before with the Mason City store. But this one, Pipe Dream Pizza opens downtown, and it shows photos here. The one at the top shows Pipe Dream pizza owners Sean Flitcroft, Bridget Porter, and Billy Cosey standing in front of their custom-made pizza oven. And it's got tiling on the top of it, the small square tiles in white, light blue, and dark blue, various shades of blue. It's put into their style that says Pipe Dream Pizza. They've spelled out with the tiles on top of this pizza oven. This new eatery focuses on Neapolitan-style pizza and has a handmade oven. And it shows here at the pit photo at the bottom, Pipe Dream pizza owners and members of the Mason City Chamber of Commerce celebrating a ribbon cutting at the restaurant that happened on Wednesday. And a group of folks is there. Along in the background, you can see the store, and the light bulbs they actually have are the old-fashioned incandescent type of light bulbs, the ones they sell at Menards. You know, it looked like they're from the 1800s. It gives the place a old-school glow. This story written by Abby Koch of the Globe Gazette. For three new restaurant co-owners, operating their own pizza place is no longer a pipe dream. It's a reality. We're not trying to reinvent the wheel. We just want something that the community can be proud of, and I think we're giving the pizza to do that, said co-owner and pizza maker Billy Cosey. Pipe Dream Pizza, located at 125 South Delaware Avenue, will have its grand opening Friday, September 16th at 4 p.m. The restaurant specializes in Neapolitan-style pizza, the original pie that was made in Naples, Italy. I had never personally had a Neapolitan style until I got a little wood fire oven and made my own, said co-owner Sean Flitcroft. Everybody thought it was great. It's just something I never had. I thought people would really enjoy it. It's basic and there's a lot of flavors to it. It's dough, sauce, and then the mozzarella cheese, said co-owner Bridget Porter. 3 years ago, Flitcroft and Porter made the wood fire pizzas at Mason City Brewing. Flitcroft decided he was tired of working at factories and wanted to do something that made him happy. His background led to the name of this restaurant. I said something to my mom about opening a pizza place, but I didn't say anything to my dad, because the whole time growing up, in the back of my head, I would hear, oh, you're just living a pipe dream, said Flitcroft. Well, we're trying to kind of decide on names. I'm like, why don't you name it Pipe Dream? And show your dad that pipe dreams do come true, said Porter. The owners had their heart set on being part of the downtown Mason City area. They lucked out when the former Domino's location opened up, allowing them to bring their over 6,000-pound oven in. The oven that was brought over from Naples and bringing it in was a tight squeeze, with only an inch to spare on either side of the door. Porter said that their oven is handmade by one of the best in the business. It's a beautiful piece of art, Porter said. A goal for the owners was to partner with local farmers for the ingredients. From there, everything is handmade in the restaurant. We're supporting our farmers and different distributors. We are just really excited for people to try it, said Porter. We make our own dough, stretch our own mozzarella, and make our own sauce, Flitcroft said. Pipe Dream Pizza will have a limited menu for the first few weeks and expand down the road. The restaurant's hours are 4 p.m. to 9 p.m. Wednesday through Saturday starting out. Updates about Pipe Dream Pizza can be found on its Facebook page. We are just trying to make the best possible dough and put the best quality ingredients on top of it and make an awesome pizza for people to enjoy, said Flitcroft. We think Mason City is ready for this. Well, that written by Abby Koch, who covers education and entertainment for the Globe Gazette. You can follow her on Twitter at MKAYABBY or email her abby.koch, K-O-C-H, at globegazette.com. And that expels everything from the first page. We've taken care of it. Moving on now to page A2 of the Mason City Globe Gazette. Our first story, woman accused of breaking no contact order five times. It's written by Lisa Gruet of the Globe Gazette. After pleading guilty to contempt charges three times since June, a Clear Lake woman is facing two more counts of breaking a no-contact order. Police say Annalisa Bryant, age 59, broke a protective order on September 1st and September 11th, stemming from a domestic assault charge in May. Court documents indicate Bryant previously pleaded guilty to identical charges on June 24th, July 21st, and August 13th. Additionally, Bryant is alleged to have broken the order on May 13th, in an incident involving a firearm for which she is facing felony charges. She also faces two misdemeanor charges of obstructing an emergency call, phone call, and interference with official acts in two of the other instances. According to the criminal complaints, on respective occasions, Bryant was found hiding in a closet in the protected party's house, watering plants outside while appearing to be intoxicated, and was found nude in the party's bed, during which time she became combative with responding officers. Bryant is in the Cerro Gordo County Jail on $500 cash-only bond and is due in court later this month. Next up, Charles City announces its homecoming court. That's written by Abby Koch from the Globe-Gazette. For the Charles City Comets, it's time to celebrate homecoming. Charles City Community School District is celebrating homecoming September 18th through the 24th. Leading off this year's homecoming schedule is a new event that brings back a flare of nostalgia as Comet Council starts the week with a bonfire and community prep rally. According to a press release, the event will be held on September 18th at the Charles City Elks Lodge. A meal of hot dogs, chips, and a beverage will be served for $5 and starts at 7 p.m. The bonfire and the pep rally begin at 7:30. Here is Charles City's homecoming schedule on September the 18th. Bonfire and $5 meal at the Charles City Elks Lodge at 7 p.m. The pep rally begins at 7:30. The next day, September the 19th, McBooster Night at the Soifer Family McDonald's at 4:30 p.m. and then JV Football at Comet Field at 6 p.m. The next day on the 20th, September 20th, 7th grade football at Comet Field at 4:15, and then 8th grade volleyball at Comet Gym at 4:15. Happens at the same time, so you can go to both or either or. 2 days from the 20th on September 22nd, the JJV volleyball at the high school game happens at 4 p.m., and then JV volleyball at Comet Gym also happens at 4 p.m. The team dinner for 9 through 12th grade students is at 1200 First Avenue across from the middle school. All athletes and performing arts students eat for free. The dinner is open to the public and costs $5. There will be yard games, a bounce house, and a DJ. Then finally, on September 23rd, a pep rally at the Comet Gym at 1:30 p.m., homecoming court coronation at Comet Gym at 2:55 p.m. There's a parade on Main Street at 4:15 p.m., 9th and 10th grade football at Comet Field at 5 p.m., homecoming court recognition at Comet Field at 7 p.m., then varsity football versus Hampton Dumont Cal at Comet Field at 7:30. The marching band and dance team perform at halftime. So that's all that's happening. The photo in this story shows Charles City High School's 2022 homecoming court. In the back row, Drew Martin, Nathan Lopez, Zachary Chambers, Anders Haglund, Caden Blunt also. In the front row, Ava Ellis, Olivia Litterer, Haley Kowalski, Nora Herska, and then Harper McInroy. So that's what's happening in the Charles City homecoming events. Now, national news. Pence angry, not fearful on January 6th. That's written by Dave Goldner of the New York Daily News. Vice President Mike Pence writes in a forthcoming memoir that he was not afraid but angry as a mob of former President Donald Trump supporters searched for him on January 6th. Pence said he believes the rioters calling for his head did not represent the tens of millions of Americans who supported them. I was not afraid, but I was angry, Pence wrote in a back cover blurb for So Help Me God, the book that hits the shelves, that's the title of it, on November the 15th. I was angry at what I saw, how it desecrated the seat of our democracy, Pence added. It dishonored the patriotism of millions of our supporters who would never do such a thing here or anywhere else. Pence's memoir is billed as an account of his journey from his youth in Columbus, Indiana, to the vice presidency of the United States. This is the inside story of the Trump administration from its second highest-ranking official and of a profound faith that has guided Pence throughout his life, his publisher says. The book includes the most robust defense of the Trump record, but also chronicles President Trump's severing of their relationship on January 6, 2021, when Pence kept his oath to the Constitution, quote unquote. Pence has said little about his experience on January 6th. Two of his top aides have described his refusal to leave the Capitol, even as thousands of violent Trump extremists erected mock gallows and chanted, "Hang Mike Pence." Trump egged on his supporters by tweeting an attack on Pence as the mob stormed the Capitol. He later told aides that he would not defend the building in part because Pence deserved it. Pence has resisted calls for him to testify before the congressional committee investigating January 6th, even though he gave his chief of staff and top counsel the green light to do so. Some members of the committee say they still expect to testify in the coming weeks. Pence is barnstorming the country and laying the groundwork for a 2024 Republican presidential bid, which could put him on a collision course with Trump, ABC News reported. Since leaving the White House, he has barely spoken to the former president, who calls him a turncoat. And with that, we have reached the halfway point in this reading of the Mason City Globe-Gazette. You are listening to IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind and Print Handicapped. All material heard here on IRIS is intended solely for the use of our audience, the blind and print disabled. This is your reader at the microphone today. My name is Andrew Haupt. If you have any questions or comments on this or any other IRIS program, then please give us a call. You're invited to do so at 515-243-6833. And now let's take a look at today's obituaries. Starting off with Cecilia Ann Medlin, who passed away September 12th of Nora Springs. Cecilia Ann Medlin, age 70, of Nora Springs, passed away Monday, September 12th, 2022, at the University of Iowa Hospitals and Clinics in Iowa City. A celebration of life gathering will be held on Saturday, September 17th, from 2 to 4 p.m. at Major Erickson Funeral Home. So that's today, at 111 North Pennsylvania. Memorials may be directed to the family of Cecilia Ann Medlin. Online condolences may be left for the family at www.MajorErickson.com. Cecilia Ann Medlin was born on November 3, 1951, to parents Merle and Cora Rodberg Kafut in Mason City, Iowa. Ann graduated from Mason City High School in 1970. On December 19, 1970, Ann was united in marriage to George William Medlin at Holy Family Catholic Church in Mason City. To this union, two children were born, Brent and Brenda. Ann worked various jobs throughout her life, but most notably, she worked at the hardware store in Nora Springs and was also employed at Diamond Dave's before her retirement. In her children's early life, Ann was a Cub Scout and Girl Scout leader. She enjoyed card club, spending time with her grandkids, and morning breakfast at McDonald's with her friends. She also loved camping and backyard fires. Ann was a loving mother, grandmother, sister, and friend, and she will be greatly missed by those who knew her and loved her. Ann is survived by her children, Brent, married to Amy Medlin, and Brenda, married to Josh Jobst, along with four grandchildren, Wyatt Medlin, Garrett Medlin, Cody Weed, and Lakota Weed. Brother Dennis, married to Muriel Kafut, and many nieces, nephews, and extended family. Ann was preceded in death by her husband, George, parents, and sister, Karen Miles. Arrangements are with the Major Erickson Funeral Home and Crematory, located at 111 North Pennsylvania Avenue in Mason City. They can be reached online at www.MajorErickson.com or via telephone 641-423-0924. Next up, Tyrone Lee Green, who passed away September the 4th, 2022. Cedar Rapids is where we go. Tyrone Lee Green, age 55, passed away Sunday, September 4th at his home in Cedar Rapids. A memorial service will be held on Saturday, September 17th at the Hogan Bremer Moore Colonial Chapel in Mason City. Visitation will start at 10 a.m. and services will start at 10:30 a.m. with Pastor Reagan Banks officiating. Interment will be in the Elmwood St. Joseph Cemetery in Mason City. Reception will be held in the chapel. Memorials can be sent in memory of Tyrone to the GoFundMe established by the family at www.gofundme.com/F/Tyrone, T-Y-R-O-N-E, dash L-E-E, Lee, dash Green, G-R-E-E-N. The son of James Green and Yvette Thompson Miller was born on April 18, 1967 in Omaha. He grew up in Mason City and attended Mason City High School, graduating in 1985. Following high school, Ty played basketball while attending Kirkwood and Mary Crest College. After college, Tyrone became passionate about business and helped to revamp several business entities of which he was very proud. Tyrone was very charismatic, always making everyone laugh and smile. Through his youth to adult life, he was a standout in everything he did, including basketball, hockey, and baseball. His heart was so loving. He could make friends of almost anyone he encountered effortlessly. Tyrone was an advocate for many and enjoyed helping others in any way he could. He loved time spent with family. With his greatest pride, enjoyed being his children and grandchildren. He loved sharing their various accomplishments, whether it be in music, sports, or otherwise, to the entire world. Those grateful in sharing in his life are his father, James, married to Linda Green of New Hampton, his children, Darian Patterson of Washington, Iowa, Molly Robinson, Dakota Green, Taylor Olson of Cedar Rapids, Tyson Green of New Hampton, Brianna Green of Minneapolis, and Jana Green of Cedar Rapids. Six beloved grandchildren, siblings, Charles married to Kathy Green of Clear Lake, Anthony Green, Justin married to Sarah Green of Mason City, Tiffany married to Glenn Green Harrington of Clear Lake, and several nieces, nephews, and cousins. He was preceded in death by his mother, Yvette Miller, and cousin Lance Whitner. And then from there we go to Merle E. Hendrickson, age 93, of Mason City, passed away on Monday, September 12, 2022, at Mercy One Medical Center, North Iowa. His attempts to fight off a recent illness peacefully ended while surrounded by the love and presence of his family and close friend Linda. Funeral services will be held at 10:30 a.m. on Monday, September 19th, at Trinity Lutheran Church at 213 North Pennsylvania Avenue in Mason City, with Pastor Dan Dahl officiating. Interment will follow at Sunset Rest Cemetery in Northwood, Iowa. Visitation will be from 3 to 5 p.m. on Sunday, September 18th, at Trinity Lutheran Church. Memorials may be directed to Trinity Lutheran Church, Waldorf College of Bartleson Scholarship Fund, or a charity of your choice. Online condolences may be left to the family at www.majorericksonfuneralhome.com. Merle Eugene Hendrickson was born in rural Worth County on June 21, 1929, the son of Pearl O. and Judith Carlson Hendrickson. Merle married Geneva Brones on June 19, 1953. To this union, five children were born: Ron, Brian, Kevin, Beth, and Mark. Merle graduated from Northwood High School class of 1947. He drove straight truck for his dad and worked at Gildner's and the local Northwood Creamery. He was drafted into the U.S. Army in 1951 and honorably discharged in 1953. He faithfully served his country during the Korean conflict. After his service and duty to country, he quickly found employment with Northwestern Bell as a lineman and retired at age 54 as an underground cable splicing foreman. After retirement, he worked with various contractors and engineering firms installing fiber optic cable, land acquisitions, pipeline, and power line easements. Merle was a longtime member of Trinity Lutheran Church, serving on various boards and committees. He would occasionally stop by the church providing treats, wisdom, and laughter as a means to keep himself involved. He was active in scouting at all levels, serving as Troop 14 Scoutmaster for a number of years. He mentored his sons and numerous other neighborhood boys, guiding several to the ranks of Eagle Scout. Family reunions were a high priority, no matter the distance or which side of the family tree. His greatest passion outside of his faith and family was the lifelong friendships with the AT&M Platoon, 110th Infantry 28th Division. They faithfully served each other by gathering every other year at different locations throughout the continental United States. He embraced his family at the AT&M Legacy and eagerly looked forward to the next vacation destination. He often got sidetracked when traveling through large cities, exposing his family to those that had far less food, clothing, and shelter. He was a thinker when it came to problem solving and eventually came up with a practical solution. He had a silent way of expressing gratitude and appreciation. Merle is survived by his five children: Dr. Ron, married to Nancy Hendrickson; Brian, married to Joan Hendrickson; Kevin, married to Susan Hendrickson; Beth, married to Tony Hack; and Mark Hendrickson. Grandchildren: Teresa Willard, Wyatt Reichertz, with Jake, Will Hendrickson; Brooke, married to Mark Nesson; Brianna Hendrickson; Kira, married to Seth Rimrot; Christina Hendrickson, married to Nate; Sarah Hack, Kasten Hendrickson, married to Nathan, 12 great-grandchildren, sister-in-law Laura Brones, sister-in-law Charlotte, and husband Dick Ullman, brother-in-law Alan Brones, and wife Billy, several nieces, nephews, cousins, and numerous lifelong special friends. Merle was preceded in death by his wife of 49 years, Geneva, parents, stepmother, brother Roger, brother Delbert, sister Jean, and brother-in-law Dale Flatness, brother-in-law Erling Thorland, and Al and Norma Brones, Edith and Robert Rausch, Donald Brones, and John Brones. Arrangements are with the Major Erickson Funeral Home and Crematory at 111 North Pennsylvania Avenue in Mason City. They can be contacted at 641-423-0924. And then lastly here, we have one Globe death notice. That would be for Kenneth E. Bauer, age 75, of Mason City, who died Wednesday, September 14th at Heritage Care and Rehabilitation Center. Arrangements are with the Major Erickson Funeral Home. And from there, we go on to the world of sports here in the Mason City Globe-Gazette for this Friday, September 16th edition, is brought to you on Saturday morning, September 17th. Hope you're getting a great start to it, everyone. Andrew Haupt with you here, filling in. We are talking all kinds of things here, but first off, we're going to talk about Elite Process. Graduate transfer LB Reader making significant impact for Cyclone Corps. Dateline Ames, this is written by Rob Gray, special to the Globe-Gazette. Iowa State cornerback TJ Tampa twisted his body to tip the pass. The football fluttered, slowly descending from the air as Cyclone linebacker Colby Reader watched and reacted. The 25-year-old graduate transfer from Delaware made a perfect catch and started to run, hoping to reach the end zone, but happy to merely make a big play in the Cyclones' 10-7 win last Saturday at Iowa that ended a six-game losing streak in the series. Tampa made an amazing play on the ball, said Reader, who hopes to continue to collect turnovers during Saturday's 1 p.m. game against Ohio at Jack Trice Stadium and beyond. You watch the replay, he did full extension, hit it up in the air, and it bounced to me. At that point, that's a gift that he basically wrapped up and tossed to me, so you've just got to secure it and try to take it to the house. Got to get there next time, though, he said. Reader, whose father, Dan, played two seasons in the NFL, and his brother, Troy, is currently a linebacker for the Los Angeles Rams, talks about the game in the same manner he plays it, with verve, joy, and intensity. The Delaware native is majoring in entrepreneurship and innovation at ISU, and that's also fitting, given how his versatility and curiosity has helped the Cyclones make the linebacking core strong again despite the graduations of Mike Rose and Jake Hummel. He has an elite process to himself, said ISU head coach Matt Campbell, whose team is 2-0 to start the season, or 2-0 to start the season, for the first time since 2012. I think we saw that in winter workouts. Man, he was a star in our workouts. And then you saw spring practice and how he handled that and fall camp. So to me, what we're seeing now is what his own process has led him to be. But what he did Saturday was fantastic. That was as good a performance that we've seen in terms of what we asked him to do. Reader wasn't the only Cyclone linebacker helping to produce takeaways. All three starters sparked one. Senior Gary Vaughn's strip sack turned into a fumble recovered by Will McDonald was the first turnover ISU had forced against the Hawkeyes since 2015. Sixth-year senior linebacker Orion Vance forced a fumble at the goal line that Kendall Jackson recovered late in the third quarter that preceded the Cyclones' nearly 12-minute game-winning touchdown drive. They've accepted me, and they're some of my best friends on the team, Reader said of Vance and Vaughn. They're awesome, and they had awesome games this past week, too. They played their butts off the entire game, so I think we're finding good chemistry, starting to get our feet under us. Our communication is getting better, so it's been awesome working with them. Well, that work continues Saturday against the Bobcats. Then it's time to turn the page to the Big 12 season and facing last year's champion, Baylor, at home. It's a transition Reader has long looked forward to making and why he left his lifelong home in the first state to become a Cyclone. I came here because I believed in it, and I think our coaches believed in it, said Reader, who was named a co-Big 12 newcomer of the week after the Iowa win. But it is nice to get some validation. Like, you can work hard and practice hard, but if you don't perform, then you know. So it's nice to have some success on the field. That's true both personally and collectively. I feel like this is what he needed, said Tampa, whose skillful tip gave Reader ISU's first interception in the Cy-Hawk game since 2014. We all love him. We're all there, so he's feeding off of that. It's perfect. All right, from there we go to tennis. Federer retiring from pro tennis. This written by Howard Fenrich, AP tennis writer. Roger Federer is retiring from professional tennis at age 41 after a series of knee operations, closing a career in which he won 20 Grand Slam titles, finished five seasons ranked number one, and helped create a golden era of men's tennis with rivals Rafael Nadal and Novak Djokovic. Federer posted what he called a bittersweet decision via social media on Thursday, less than a week after 23-time major champion Serena Williams played what is expected to be the last match of her career, combined the exits by two of the greatest athletes in their sport's history, represent a significant turning of the page. As many of you know, the past 3 years have presented me with challenges in the form of injuries and surgeries. I've worked hard to return to full competitive form, Federer wrote on Twitter. But I also know that my body's capacities and limits, and its message to me lately has been clear. Federer has not competed since Wimbledon in July of 2021, and so in that sense, his news is not all that surprising. But he had appeared at an event marking the 100-year anniversary of Center Court at the All England Club this July and said he hoped to come back to play there one more time. He also had said he would return to tournament action in his home country at the Swiss Indoors in October. In Thursday's announcement, Federer said his farewell event will be the Laver Cup in London next week. That is a team event run by his management company. Federer is married, and he and his wife, Mirka, a tennis player too, they met as athletes at an Olympics, have two sets of twins. He leaves with a total of 103 tour-level titles on his substantial resume and 1,251 wins in singles matches, both second only to Jimmy Connors in the Open era, which began in 1968. Federer's records include being the oldest number one in ATP rankings history. He returned to the top spot at 36 in 2018, and most consecutive weeks there, his total weeks mark was eclipsed by Djokovic. When Federer won his first Grand Slam title at Wimbledon in 2003, the men's record for most was held by Pete Sampras, who had won his 14th at the U.S. Open the year before in what turned out to be the last match of the American's career. Federer would go on to blow way past that, ending up with 20 by winning 8 championships at Wimbledon, 6 at the Australian Open, 5 at the U.S. Open, and 1 at the French Open. His 2009 trophy at Roland Garros allowed Federer to complete a career Grand Slam. His serving, forehand, footwork, and attacking style will all be remembered. Also unforgettable were his matches against younger rivals Nadal, age 36, and Djokovic, age 35, who both equaled, then surpassed, Federer's slam total and are still winning titles at the sport's four biggest tournaments. Nadal now leads the count with 22, one ahead of Djokovic. I was lucky enough to play so many epic matches that I will never forget, Federer said in Thursday's announcement. Addressing his competitors on the court, although not by name, he wrote, "We pushed each other, and together we took tennis to new levels." Federer's last match anywhere came on July 7th when he lost at Center Court in the Wimbledon quarterfinals to Hubert Hurkacz, 6-3, 7-6, and 6-0. Soon after, Federer had surgery to repair damage to his meniscus and cartilage in his right knee, his third operation on that knee in a span of 1.5 years. "Tennis has treated me more generously than I would ever have dreamt," Federer said Thursday, "and now I must recognize when it is time to end my competitive career." And another front-page sports news. Iowa football, Gavin Williams hoping to spark Hawkeyes' run game. After being limited in Week 2, the sophomore is healthier for Week 3. That's written by Steve Batterson of the Quad City Times, Dateline Iowa City. There won't be a cape attached to the back of Gavin Williams' jersey Saturday, but the now-healthy Iowa running back hopes to make a difference this week. Williams said Tuesday he expects an expanded role in the Hawkeyes' game against Nevada as he works his way back from an ankle injury that has slowed the start to his season. The sophomore sees an opportunity to help jumpstart a rushing attack, which has contributed to Iowa's early season offensive struggles by averaging 1.9 yards per carry, about half of the established goal for Hawkeye running backs. The goal this week is to get out of our way and play ball, Williams said. Body position, picking up blocks, staying inside out, having your hands in the right place, those are things that don't let you get the most out of every play. They may be seemingly little things, but they need to be consistent for an offense to work. At this point, Williams is ready to get back to work. The injury he suffered during preseason camp kept Williams off the field during Iowa's season-opening win over South Dakota State and limited him last weekend against Iowa State. Williams was eased back into competition as a third-down back against the Cyclones, and he gained 10 yards on two carries. LaShawn Williams made his first career starts, and Williams' absence has gained 106 yards on 38 carries through two games while scoring the Hawkeyes' only touchdown of the season. Gavin Williams welcomes the chance to grow his role Saturday at the 6:40 p.m. game matchup against Nevada. I'm coming in a little banged up from camp and everything, but I feel like going into this week that I'm ready to go 100%. I'm feeling good, he said. That alone is progress for an offense that ranks last among the 131 teams in the Football Bowl subdivision, with its average of 158 total yards per game, and is 127th nationally in both rushing and passing offense. Missing time because of an injury hasn't made it any easier for Williams. We've had a lot of guys miss time, and that's been frustrating, Williams said. We know that we are a better offense than we've shown, and now it's time to eliminate mistakes and prove it. Iowa coach Kirk Ferentz said the return of a healthy Williams opens some things up beyond his ability to carry the football. He said Gavin Williams brings a pass-catching threat to the running back position that LaShawn Williams does. Had Gavin Williams been out with us the last couple of weeks, we would have used him a little bit as a receiver because he does that pretty adeptly, Ferentz said. But we didn't have that option available, so it was one more thing to take off the board for consideration. With receivers Nico Reganey and Keegan Johnson on the practice field this week after missing the first two games with injuries, Ferentz believes added healthy, experienced bodies to the mix should be a difference maker. We're clearly not operating where we want to operate right now. That's evident by our point total, Ferentz said. Ultimately, that's something we're trying to do, is get the point level where we want and where we can win games on a consistent basis. Williams believes the pieces are in place for Iowa to be respectable, a respectable offensive team. I feel like the sky is the limit, that we are a lot better than we've shown the past couple of weeks, he said. The 6-foot, 214-pound back from Altoona, Iowa, believes production in the run game can help take some of the passing attack that has struggled with multiple injuries. He sees that as the joint responsibility of the backs and a line that he believes will come together with experience. We need to get it moving forward and believe it will. I believe it will, Williams said. Ferentz appreciates not only Williams' skill, but the way he has matured into one of the leaders on the Iowa team. He's a really good mentor and a leader, Ferentz said. He's not that old of a guy, but he's a really good steadying influence in a really young running back room, so appreciate that about him as well. That has been a way Williams has been able to stay active and involved until he has been able to return to full speed. It's been frustrating not being out there and being able to help, Williams said. You do what you can from the sidelines, try to help the younger guys who are out there, but it's tough when you're not in a position to go. It's good to be back. Well, we have some time left here. Why don't we check in with a story we didn't get to? Actually, two stories. Ukraine attempts to keep up momentum. Russia strikes flood areas near hometown of President Zelensky. This written by Hannah Arova of the Associated Press, Dateline Kyiv, Ukraine, where President Volodymyr Zelensky work Thursday to add political momentum to Ukraine's recent military gains against Russia, while missile strikes that caused flooding near his hometown demonstrated Moscow's determination to reclaim the battlefield advantage. A week after a Ukrainian counteroffensive caused Russian troops to retreat from a northeast region, Zelensky met with European Union Chief Ursula von der Leyen during her third wartime visit to Kyiv. Von der Leyen publicly conveyed the wholehearted support of the 27-nation bloc and wore an outfit in Ukraine's national colors, highlighting the breadth of the nearly 7 months of fighting. Air raid sirens blared several times during the meeting, showing the fear and damage Russian troops still could inflict. Ukrainian officials said Russian missile strikes on a reservoir dam near Kryvyi Rih, Zelensky's birthplace and the largest city in central Ukraine, sent water raging through some streets. Over 100 homes were flooded. Russian military bloggers charged the attack was intended to flood areas downstream, where Ukrainian forces made inroads as part of their counteroffensive. The Ukrainian head of the local government later reported a second attack on the dam and said emergency crews were working to prevent more water from escaping. Next up, we have a report saying spending is up despite inflation. Fewer sought jobless aid and long-term average mortgage rates surge. This is an AP story out of New York. As Americans picked up spending a bit in August, even amid surging inflation, U.S. retail sales rose an unexpected 0.3% last month after falling 0.4% in July, the Commerce Department said Thursday. Excluding business at gas stations, sales rose 0.8%. Sales of purchases at motor vehicles and parts dealers rose 2.8% last month. Excluding vehicle sales, spending slipped 0.3%. Excluding both vehicle and gas spending, retail sales rose 0.3%. While the report showed shoppers' resilience, the figures are not adjusted for inflation. There was weakening in some areas of discretionary spending. Sales at furniture stores fell 1.3%. Online sales fell 0.7%. Meanwhile, the number of Americans applying for unemployment benefits fell again last week to a four-month low, even as the Federal Reserve continues aggressive interest rate cuts to bring inflation under control. And that concludes this reading of the Mason City Globe Gazette for Friday, September the 16th, coming to you on Saturday morning the 17th. This is Andrew Halp with the microphone. Thanks for sharing your time with IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the blind and print handicapped. Have a great weekend, everyone, and straight ahead.